somewhere in the last 20 years or so, the noun parent became a verb. To parent is something we do. And this gives rise to the delusion of parental perfectionism. No one who's had children can really believe this for long, but some people believe that if you parent with sufficient skill, you're going to produce awesome, wonderful, flawless children.
I'm a parent, and we're going through
I've raised,
stuff. Yeah.
Raised four children. I'm telling you, it ain't happening. But anyway, these children are raised by risk-averse parents, helicopter parents who hover over them, who supervise them too much. Don't just let them go out and roam the neighborhood and play and learn how to cope for themselves. That's part of growing up.
Right.
And so these overparent children arrive on college campuses where they immediately want not freedom of speech, but freedom from speech. It might upset their brittle little souls. They want safe spaces in which they can cower while biased response teams flood around the campus looking for people who are saying things distressing to these snowflakes.
Snowflakes. What a perfect word to describe children. That is political commentator, journalist, Pulitzer Prize winner, George Will. I don't care what your politics are, you're going to really enjoy this. George covers everything from the Rolling Stones, the Beach Boys, security in our nation's capital, Donald Trump, Barack Obama, how he got to be as such a divisive culture. He's really on his game in this conversation. Really interesting, really insightful, and funny, too. Before we get to the full interview, I saw my first John Wick movie. I know I sound like I'm way behind the time, but I got to tell you, too much dialogue needs a little bit more violence. Would it kill you to get a second suit? I mean, it's a black suit. You can go to Marshall's. You get one for, I don't know, $80, $100. Come on. At least go to the cleaner. All right. Enjoy George Will.
My guest this week is a highly respected Pulitzer Prize-winning columnist and political analyst, George Will. He has a new book out, American Happiness and Discontents, The Unruly Torrent, 2008 to 2020. George, it's so great to have you on. I've been reading you for years and watching your analysis and think you're a very important voice in the political scene. So it's a real honor to have you on the show.
I'm delighted to be with you.
So I'm curious about the time frame that you focused on and why you started with 2008 in this sort of period of analysis that you've done in this book, which covers politics, but interestingly enough, other sort of aspects of society, which we'll talk about in a minute. But why 2008?
Because this is when it was the end of the George W. Bush administration. It was the advent of the strangely, in my judgment, because I don't quite understand it, polarizing Barack Obama presidency that led, of course, to the extremely difficult presidency of our 45th president, Mr. Trump. So this is a period that suggests comparisons with the 1790s when political parties, which the founders neither anticipated nor desired, emerged, and we began to figure out how to have partisanship that was civil. It's a kind of tumultuous period of dissent and unhappiness, somewhat comparable to the 1850s when the country was tiptoeing toward real civil conflict. I don't think we're heading there, but I think we're having a very difficult time regaining our emotional equilibrium in this country.
Well, it's funny because one of the things I wanted to ask you was, do you think in terms of this sort of intense divide that exists, do you think this country's running a high fever that will break at some point? Or is this where we are going forward?
Well, I don't think it will last. I think your choice of the word fever is a good one. Fevers burn themselves out before they kill their host, usually.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the case. I think we should not exaggerate, A, how obsessed most of the country is with politics. Most Americans are busy cleaning the gutters, fixing the storm windows, raising mm-hmm. children, getting on with their lives. Mm-hmm. And for them, politics is a marginal, peripheral distraction, and that, frankly, is a sign of national health that most people are not obsessed with politics.
Right.
You know, we've got 331 million people in this country, and at any given time, 325 million of them are not watching cable television, neither MSNBC nor Fox, which, again, I say is great.
Yes.
Second, we have a small minority of Americans are addicted to furiousness and hysteria. Just this weekend, we have coming up a rally in Washington on people supporting the people who stormed the Capitol on January 6th. Now, I think supporting those people is disgusting, but it's the First Amendment right. Let them at it. You know what we've done? These frightened people who run our security in this town have re-erected that obscene fence around the Capitol, which communicates to the world the quite false impression that we are a fragile country. This country was not made by fragile people, and it is not fragile. And we look like a banana republic that's worried about a rest of infantry regiment at the edge of town. It's just, it, as you can tell, it makes me a little hot under the collar.
Yeah, I like this side of George Will. do you? but what is, just to take sort of the other side of that for a moment. So, you know, we live in a world where there's a lot of, pardon my French, CYA, right? So like if these politicians don't do this, that, you know, and something happens, God forbid, that's even, you know, somewhat close to what happened on January 6th, they get their heads handed to them in the press and by their constituents. And there is a chance, I mean, given what happened, that there could be unrest. If you don't put a fence up, what do you do?
We have, in addition to the Metropolitan Police Department of the District of Columbia, about 35, and I'm not making this up, about 35 different police forces in this town. If between them, they cannot contain a rally, a mall in Washington.
Yeah.
We ought to get rid of 35 of them and start over.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a really great point. Why do you think the Barack Obama period was so divisive? Did it have to do with the fact that he's an African-American president and that really unsettled a lot of people?
I think that was a portion of it. Not an insignificant one, but a small portion of it. A lot of people were told, and God knows there are a lot of people will believe whatever they're told these days. They were told he was not born in this country, that he was a Muslim, etc. We know who one of the loudest voices was in spreading such nonsense. The principal spreader of it became the successor to Barack Obama.
Right.
Barack Obama had a kind of professorial lecturing tone on occasion that grated on people. He had a big agenda with Obamacare, because health care is an issue vital to all Americans. And the Obamacare was, which now is more popular than it used to be, was extremely unpopular when it was pushed on the country by a party line vote.
What is it in the book that you're trying to convey to readers about this period of time?
I think it's that the axiom is right that says politics is downstream from culture, and cultural questions deserve more of our attention than the day-to-day ripples on the pond in Washington and the twitches of whoever's president.
Mm-hmm.
By which I mean, there are two sections in the book. One is, then they follow one another. One is called On Parenting, and the other is on the nonsense on our campuses, and they're related. You know, somewhere in the last 20 years or so, the noun parent became a verb. To parent is something we do. And this gives rise to the delusion of parental perfectionism. Mm-hmm. No one who's had children can really believe this for long, but some people believe that if you parent with sufficient skill, you're going to produce awesome, wonderful, flawless children.
Yeah, I'm a parent, and we're going through
I've
stuff.
Raised, yeah. I've raised four children. I'm telling you, it ain't happening. But anyway, these children are raised by risk-averse parents, helicopter parents who hover over them, who supervise them too much. Don't just let them go out and roam the neighborhood and play and learn how to cope for themselves. That's part of growing up.
Right.
And so these overparent children arrive on college campuses, where they immediately want not freedom of speech, but freedom from speech that might upset their brittle little souls. they want safe spaces in which they can cower while biased response teams flood around the campus looking for people who are saying things distressing to these snowflakes.
Snowflakes.
It's an extremely disagreeable development, and alarming, because what happens on campus does not stay on campus. We see it permeating our culture today, where there are assaults on freedom of speech all over the place.
Mm, It's like you're a fly on the wall in our house, because I've been saying things like this to my wife, and God bless her. She's a lovely woman and a great mother. And we have this divide between us about sort of, you know, our son. And I call it old school or whatever, but I just feel like at times, there are a lot of excuses that people rely on when it's convenient for them at that age to sort of justify some of their behavior, but then want to turn around and claim that they're misunderstood by parents and, you know, this is a different generation, et cetera, et cetera. And you're right. The idea and they're quick to at times sort of point out your flaws as a parent, but don't want to own their own as a child and as a responsible young adult. And it's very confounding. And what is it? That is the first part of the book. There's a second section that follows that, I think you were saying.
That's what follows the parenting is the one on the strange doings in academia. I mean, the stuff that goes on in academia, you can't make it up.
Yeah.
Do you know that Brandeis University has decided that trigger warnings need trigger warnings? because a trigger might make people think of guns, and warning might suggest that there's something dangerous.
Yeah.
Again, you cannot make this stuff up.
Yeah. I really would love to try to get you back on, because there's so much I want to talk to you about, and we're on a tight schedule. But you have other musings in the book on Frank Sinatra, the Beach Boys, and the morality of football. Touch on one of those for me for a moment, if you will.
Well, I'll touch on all of them. The Beach Boys are part of the Beach Boys are now in their 70s.
Exactly.
I wrote about them on their 50th anniversary tour. But it's interesting to me the way pop music cues, triggers, if I may use that dangerous word, triggers baby boomer nostalgia.
Yeah.
Frank Sinatra to me is just compare the elegance of his lyrics. I give the lyrics from The Summer Wind Came Blowing Across the Sea. Mm. Compare that to I Can't Get No Satisfaction, I Can't Get No Girly Action. I mean, the decline from Sinatra and the Great American Songbook to the Rolling Stones is, to say no more, striking. And football, since we're now sunk in that season again, seems to me combines the two worst features of modern life. It's violence punctuated by committee meetings called huddles. And the more we know about football, what the kinetic energy of that sport does to the human body, and particularly the brain, small cumulative concussions that bring on Alzheimer's and other awful developments, the more Americans should, they won't, but they should feel guilty about enjoying it.
Yeah. Yeah, actually, there's a really good miniseries on the NFL Network that tracks the rise of college football in the NCAA. And early on, Teddy Roosevelt pulled the coaches in for the administrators from Princeton, Harvard, and I believe Yale, who had, you know, in the 1800s had a football program, and said, "You got to clean this up. It's too violent, and people are dying on the field. And if you don't, then
people
were
getting killed."
And yeah.
If something was too rough for the Rough Rider, Teddy Roosevelt, it was rough.
It was definitely rough. Well, listen, the book is American Happiness and Discontents, The Unruly Torrent, 2008 to 2020. And it's the brilliant and insightful and funny George Will. Great to have you on the show.
Great to be with you. Let's do it again.
All right, there you have it. That's George Will. I just thought he was really funny and on target with a lot of stuff. Anyway, I hope you enjoyed the conversation, and thank you for checking out the podcast. Don't forget the YouTube channel, youtube.com/PaulMercurio, and go check out a John Wick movie. You know, it's a little slow in places, but, you know, you'll muddle through. All right. See you next week, everybody.